Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. This is going to be podcast 552, live from AgoraFest, and I'm in Mobile Podcast Command, hanging out at AgoraFest. It's very quiet. We're over in Wisconsin, way over in western Wisconsin, at a resort. It's a really great place, and we're just hanging out, and I realized I gotta throw up this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show, number 45, so let's just roll segment one. Welcome to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. For all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. So this is a show that usually takes content from my podcast back to the radio, but this time it's going to be four segments of new content, both for radio listeners and podcast subscribers, like four mini podcasts. And it would be easier, I guess, for me to take a couple of podcasts that I've done this week, like I usually do, and condense them for both radio listeners and podcast subscribers. First of all, I don't feel like doing that. Second of all, we're getting back into a news-rich environment, and it doesn't feel right to me to look back when I could be looking forward. I want to talk about two concepts in this show that I talk about sometimes on the podcast, as well as some review of the presidential race, which I'll do in the last segment. Two things I've been turning over and over recently. First is the concept of escape, as I said. The other is the concept of new thinking versus old thinking. So there's a new television series called Stranger Things, which is a great sci-fi thriller comic book type show that I just spent an entire weekend watching. I just binged out on it. Stranger Things is also a show lots of younger people are watching because it is set beautifully, by the way, in the 1980s, and it's on Netflix, which means it just plays autoplay until you're done with it. So if it's Game of Thrones, The Walking Dead, Stranger Things, House of Cards, the new Longmire, whatever these days, just about everybody at some point is binge watching something, especially if they're under 45. Well, what are we doing when we do this? Well, we're escaping, and there's certainly healthy escape, and then there's the kind of escape that you engage in because you just can't take any more reality, which is one of the reasons I was looking for something like Stranger Things to watch this weekend. The other concept I'm going to talk about in this show is new thinking versus old thinking. Everywhere you go in this society, there's evidence of two different worlds. The country is divided. Now, maybe not in the political sense that everybody has become familiar with, right and left, when using the term divided. There are people who are still living in the old world and people living in the new world. I don't necessarily think this is an age thing, although I think it is a line of demarcation that age plays a role in to a degree. But really, it's a way of thinking rather than a group of people on one side of a line and a group of people on another. Some of us have a foot or a leg or an arm or part of our head over the line, while other parts of our bodies are still on the other side. Now, as never before, we are capable of revolutionary actions in the world. But this seems to escape us on a day-to-day basis unless we're deep in it. Revolutionary capabilities to learn, revolutionary capabilities to communicate, revolutionary abilities to create, revolutionary capabilities to consume. Some of us are part of this in our everyday lives, but we all don't fully embrace it, right? This is to say that part of us lives and thinks in the old ways, while another part of us might live and think in the new ways. How do we get rid of the old thinking? Do we want to get rid of the old thinking? What are some examples of both my experience in business and politics and communication? What are some examples of the new thinking in the same areas? Why is this important? People might be listening and say, well, why would this be important? Well, one of the themes that I've been returning to again and again in my podcasts and these shows is the concept that people have gotten out ahead of the political party's capacity. Now, the people don't know this per se. They don't go around saying, hey, Joe, we've gotten out ahead of the two-party system and blah, 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 blah. But I think there's evidence of this in the dissatisfaction and frustration people seem to feel about political parties and candidates, regardless of where they come down on the party orientation scale. So if the current party system has gotten behind the people, you can imagine how far behind government policy is. The constellation of laws and regulation to enforce laws enacted by Congress and the presidents respectively, is much further behind the people if the political parties, which should be more attuned to the people, have somehow gotten behind us. It's literally the cart before the horse. This is one of the reasons the government doesn't seem to be able to affect a positive result in getting the economy to grow past 1% or 2% per year. It's one of the reasons the government doesn't seem to be able to address other persistent problems to anyone's satisfaction. It doesn't mean that there's some solution that me, Joe Normal, knows that the guys in Washington or your state capital don't, but it does mean that the people charged with the responsibility to come up with solutions may be so far behind the curve that they just aren't able to think in a revolutionary way and to take revolutionary action that could literally address these problems. Could it be that this is what's going on or what is wrong with the system that vexes so many people? Old thinking. One of the things I learned this week, getting old thinking out of your system can be very difficult. You might even be young, but if you think of things a certain way because that is the way you've done things in the past, getting rid of those thought paradigms so that you can be free from the confines of those thoughts can be very, very difficult. Now, this has occurred to me more than once, but this time it occurred to me while attending a digital marketing seminar for business. And when we debriefed my friends and I later on this, since a lot of us work in politics or communications, the political question came up. Are we engaging in too much old thinking in our political world? So I'm going to spend a segment talking about this experience and the conversation, and hopefully I can convert some people to some new forms of thinking, or at least create a path to that that can help you in business, really in anything that you do. And finally, to the political front. So we're on the eve of the debates between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, coming on the heels of her collapse in New York and on the heels of what some have called Trump missteps on the campaign trail in the last few days. Of course, as I told you, when the former First Lady, Senator, and Secretary of State collapsed, I said it. And I said it would be sucked up by the media because it is a new storyline. And they wanted to know, is she sick? What's wrong with her? Will she get back up? How will this affect her election chances? And so on. Of course, no one knew the answers to those questions. And anyone who tried to answer them is engaging in and was engaging in nothing more than speculation, which of course continues. But that doesn't stop the process of creating these storylines. I also told you not to pay attention to national preference polls for president, mainly because we do not elect our presidents by popular vote. Of course, the United States Electoral College elects the president. And of course, the first national poll taken right after Clinton's deplorable comments and her collapse on the street in New York showed Trump in the lead by more than 1%. And now a new poll has shown Clinton in the lead by 5. And this, of course, has become the lead political story with all kinds of speculation about the sympathy vote, which I also predicted, versus because the race is tighter, it's bringing out her supporters and so on and so on. Now, at the same time, state-by-state polls in so-called battleground states are showing a much tighter race with toss-up votes in key toss-up states, which means a lot of this election is really too close to call right now, despite attempts by pundits and pollsters and everybody else to tell you what is going to happen. And I'm not going to do that. I don't know what's going to happen. Honestly, I don't think anyone can tell you with any degree of confidence what is going to happen, but that doesn't stop them from trying to tell you based on storylines. I want to spend some time talking about how these storylines work, how they're developed, and how we're really not getting good information from any media sources right now. So we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about some of the changeovers in individual states a little bit from one candidate to another and how that's affecting the race. But bottom line is, this presidential race is still not predictable. We might see more after the debates, but I'm going to talk about why later on in this show. Coming up, what do you do when you want to escape the madness? I binge view. Next. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. You can also sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter, The Bob Line, at thebobdavispodcasts.com. And when you go to the BobDavisPodcast.com, when you hit the site with a desktop, you'll get a streaming audio immediately. And then if you're on a smartphone, you initiate the live streaming. So we're also doing live streaming of the Bob Davis Podcast at thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcast's radio show. Back in Mobile Podcast Command, live at AgoraFest in the vehicle, and I'm getting ready to go have some dinner, but I thought I would throw up Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show number 45 just ahead of segment 2 for this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Mobile Podcast Command heading out west in October, and I'm just trying to figure out the trip now, trying to figure out, do I want to go over the Cascades in October, and what's the situation with the weather? But Mobile Podcast Command is running great, and it came, of course, from xgovernmentcars.com. And I've often told the story, I wanted a work van, because xgovernmentcars.com has work vans, they have work trucks, they have pickups, they have, Yukons, Expeditions, and I thought, well, I'll just get an F-350 or something, or an E-350, and that'll be good. And Ed Johnson was like, no, we're going to get you an ambulance, it'll be great, and it was. And so Ed is the spiritual father of Mobile Podcast Command, and xgovernmentcars.com is Minnesota's only dealer, specializing in one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs. We're talking Crown Vics while they last, the Ford Police sedans, Dodge Chargers, Ford Police SUVs, Expeditions, Yukons. If you need a car and you need a loan, if you have a job, you're going to be approved. They can approve all levels of credit at xgovernmentcars.com, and they take trades. They pay the highest values every day without Audible. I've seen them do it. Don't forget, they also have the 3-day love it guarantee exclusively at xgovernmentcars. So here's what you do. Get your butt down. Let me shout it out. Get your butt down to xgovernmentcars.com in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North, or you can call them. Reach out old school at 763-777-8782, or of course online. And yeah, I brought the bullhorn out here to AgoraFest.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Okay, here's segment 2. Funny thing about segment 2. So, you know, I obviously produce the radio show. So I recorded 4 new segments of new content in this Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. So this is not rehashing of podcasts from this week for a lot of reasons, because I had to do it on Wednesday. And of course, I record it, right? I don't do it live. And so there's a piece in here, you'll notice in this second segment, where I screwed up and I go, and it's just funny because I decided to leave it in because I was already up here. And I was like, I'm not reproducing that segment to send to gcnlive.com. So it's just funny to me that I left that in there. Here is segment 2 of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show number 45. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. You can also sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter, The Bob Line, at thebobdavispodcasts.com. So we're going to talk about escapism in this segment of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Escapism is the tendency to seek distraction and relief from unpleasant realities, especially by seeking entertainment or engaging in fantasy. I recently took some time off, and I ended up spending a lot of time catching up on TV shows I either don't watch or have already watched, or new shows that I've heard about that I went crazy with. Now, this isn't watching TV in the conventional sense, like Star Trek is on at 7 Central, 8 Eastern, and I don't want to miss it. This is streaming video content on channels like Netflix, where you select a show, and as long as you're still watching it, it just sits there and streams it, which I love. Homeland, Shameless, House of Cards, Game of Thrones, Gotham, Daredevil, House of Cards 2. 3, 2, 1. Homeland, Shameless, House of Cards, Game of Thrones, Gotham, Daredevil, Longmire, and so on. New shows like Stranger Things become national obsessions, and we all talk about what happened in the show this week, or actually you don't even talk about what happened in the show this week, you just talk about, I binge-watched the whole show. And usually people are like, where are you in the show, first of all, if you want to talk about it, and you tell them, and then they say, oh my God, I can't tell you what happens next, but you're going to love it. That sheriff, and so on. I gotta go, right? So it's a form of escapism, and I imagine it's healthy most of the time. But when you spend a weekend in front of the TV and you watch so much television that you're dizzy and you feel like you have a hangover the next day, you really start to wonder, is this a drug? Well, yes, I think it is. I think it's a relatively harmless drug, and sometimes it's a really fun drug. I also watch a lot of movies this way, some I've seen and some that I haven't. And one of the movies I mentioned in podcast this week that I watch again and again is the movie Into the Wild, which is the movie version of the John Krakauer book about the kid who broke from his life upon graduation from Emory, broke from the norm and headed off into a special adventure all his own. Now, in the movie, the kid, whose name is Chris McCandless, talked about how possessions and money and jobs can basically hold us down and keep us from truly sensing or feeling free to experience something different than what old thinking, if you will, has led us to. Now, in his case, he wanted to experience nature, which, of course, ended, if you know the story, ended badly for him because he decided to go into the Alaskan wilderness with little preparation, ate some wrong berries, which then caused him to starve to death. Now, I watched this movie, as I said, a couple of times a year, and over the years, it has produced different reactions. First time I saw it, I was really mad at the kid. But now I'm not so sure how I feel about him. You know, yes, he headed into the wilderness with little preparation and almost no skills, but I understand now what drove him to do that a little bit. I get up every day, and if I can, I walk barefoot into the field by my house, and I sit there, and I drink my coffee, and I do not talk to myself. I do not talk. I do not linger on any thought for too long. I just think about it. And the Into the Wild story came up because I was thinking about escape, breaking completely free from the seeming madness that is going on in our world today, the madness we see on television all the time, and for me, really, doing something totally different that doesn't have anything to do with any of that, because that's how sick I am of all this political back and forth and the bickering and the nastiness on social media and in what is now referred to as mainstream media. But it's also the stuff that you see on YouTube and Facebook and the videos, the conspiracy stuff, and so on. So yeah, I want to escape to an alternate world where things can be explained, where you can shout, oh, no, you don't go in there. And the outcome proves that they should have listened, right? That's the whole thing about these shows. I did this podcast this week about escape, partially because I wanted to escape, because I do not want to be the talk radio guy or the podcaster who rants and raves about how terrible this is or what that candidate did this week right up until election day. It just seems to me to be a waste of time. Sometimes there is a reason to talk about what is going on in the world, whether it's something like what a candidate said or did, a problem like the one Hillary Clinton had last weekend, or something that happens in the world that commands attention. The problem is so much of the information that people get these days is speculation. It's wrapped up in very thin factual data. The best way to explain it is it's really a lot of speculation wrapped up in a very thin factual tortilla. You're getting somebody's opinion clad in a thin veil of legitimacy. You're finding an article on one website, which has been rewritten, you don't know this, but it is, from another website, which rewrote their article from base material on yet another website. And I'm talking about the news sites. I'm not even talking about the conspiracy sites or the YouTube videos where they show a video that Hillary Clinton did 3 weeks ago and say, see, this is what her problem is. If you're watching the news on Facebook, or if you're watching these videos on YouTube or Twitter, what you're getting are highly partisan memes, videos, and all of it is designed to prove this guy was shot down in cold blood or Hillary is dying or dead. That's not a lie. That's a lot on YouTube. Or that Donald Trump is a fascist and so forth. Again, I don't blame anybody from wanting to escape all of this. But how do you escape? What's healthy escape? What's unhealthy escape? Well, you know, I'm sure that I would say that exercise is a healthy escape. I would say some people believe drugs and alcohol are an escape, and they are, but they have long-lasting knock-on negative effects. Games and gaming can be a big escape. Music, I think, is a healthy escape. Movies, I love. TV shows streamed all weekend is great, but I don't know if that's good because, I mean, you know, sometimes when I stream, my son is here, it's really fun because you spend time with your kids doing this. But what about getting out in the woods or on hikes or on the river or the lake, working in the yard or up at the lake place? Some people invent things. They write, they build model cars and airplanes or do crafts. So something that takes you completely away from the world as it is does not have to be necessarily binge viewing a TV show. And I think that's good considering the world as it actually is these days. And I guess the whole intent of this segment is to get you to think about escape. How do you escape? And I think it is healthy to want to escape, especially all this craziness and especially all this information occasionally. But there are unhealthy ways of escape too. So it's just something to sort of a thought starter for you to talk about. Coming up, are you an old thinker, new thinker, or maybe a little of both? I think most of us are probably a little of both. How do we get rid of the old thinking? Do we want to get rid of all of the old thinking? Next. So as you listen to this, I've been spending the weekend at AgoraFest, a big convention of market anarchists, and I'll tell you all about that on the podcasts next week. And then I'm going to be heading out west in Mobile Podcast Command, so I'm taking donations for Mobile Podcast Command for Komodo Dragon Coffee and Beef Jerky and mostly diesel fuel. So stay tuned to the Bob Davis Podcast for more information about that. Again, for more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com and check out the streaming audio on thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Welcome back to AgoraFest. We are live inside Mobile Podcast Command AgoraFest, which is a gathering of market anarchists and crazy libertarians, and it's really fun. And my next podcast, I'll detail a little bit of what goes on out here. So we're in the middle here of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show number 45. And we're getting ready to do segment three. Now, the weather is starting to change. This week, we had a lot of rain. If you're from Minnesota, you know what I'm talking about. Every September, it's the same thing, even though this year it feels much more epic. But after September comes October and November, and it starts to get cold, and you're going to want to turn your furnace on. And when you do, are you sure it's going to work? So you probably should have Ryan Plumbing and Heating come out and check your furnace just to make sure everything's operating correctly, especially if you have older parents that don't check that kind of thing. It's great to call Ryan and have him just come out and check it. And when they do, ask them about high-efficiency heat, because if you can do it, you'll save pretty much the cost of the install over the next 4 or 5 years. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you it's cheap, but it does pay for itself over time. So for Ryan Plumbing and Heating, heating check. Call 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs, too. And, of course, they've been around for four generations. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. And, you know, if you run a business, I think the heating thing also goes for businesses, because you go to turn the heat on and you got problems. Have the heating checked before you turn it on for the first time and hope, cross your fingers, that it works. Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol, where they've always been. Again, think Ryan Plumbing and Heating for all that stuff. Water heater checks, emergency service, getting your heating checked before the season changes in St. Paul, 651-224-4771, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, online at ryanplumbing.com. They have some great content at ryanplumbing.com. ryanplumbing.com. And again, thanks you guys for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Okay, here is segment three of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. I've been doing this networking events thing for my business lately. Part of it is that when you work by yourself and in your home, which is what I do, you really do need human contact and you need interaction with human beings. It's not necessarily something that I want to do, but I do it anyway because it actually helps with the sales effort for the BobDavisPodcasts.com. I'm certainly no introvert in the sense that once I get in a crowd of networkers, I'm fine jumping in and introducing myself and explaining to people what I do. This week, digital marketing was on the list. That was on the agenda. I went to this digital marketing seminar type thing, which is a little different from networking in the sense that you are there to learn something new. You certainly introduce yourself, and then there's time after the presentation to talk to people and hand out cards or whatever that you end up doing. Almost everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about. I also have come to believe that it is better when you take somebody with you, because you can talk back and forth during the thing, and then it's better to have a wingman at these events, because then you're not the weird eccentric guy who does the podcasts standing in the corner by himself, which is usually what I'm doing. So I took my friend and my web guy, Mitch, with me. Actually, he took me with him to this thing, and I went to get in to find out about the digital marketing thing in an effort to learn more about how to be better at digital marketing, because that's the business that we're in. So we did learn about that, and we did learn more about it. And we're going to end up putting as much of what we learn into action as possible, because we're going to go back. Because the other thing I've learned is that if you go once to one of these things, you really don't get as much out of it as you do if you go regularly. Now, I came away, though, with a weird kind of realization that I think makes great podcast / radio show fodder, even if it's just for a segment or two. So, I mentioned I was going to do this. At the very beginning of the digital marketing seminar, the speaker said, there's really nothing unique about digital marketing in the sense that it works just like traditional advertising, broadcast, print, newspaper, and so forth. It just works faster and more efficiently. Now, there are exceptions, of course. You have to know what you're doing, and of course, you can waste just as much in the digital world time and money, if not more, than in the traditional advertising world. But the nuts of this is, for me, this question of old thinking versus new thinking, because I'm sitting there listening to this, and I was wondering to myself how much of what I'm doing now is influenced by old thinking versus new thinking. I've certainly been around a while, and my formative years in business were influenced by a traditional advertising source and a traditional media business now called radio. When I started in radio, as I've said many times, it was a forward-thinking technical business. That's not the case these days. So a lot of how I think and what I think about when it comes to expanding my reach is based on radio thinking. And I work so hard to get that out of my head on a constant basis. And I've talked a lot about radio as a business, about how we radio people are very much up, down, right, left, you win, I lose, I win, you lose oriented, which really doesn't apply in today's digital world. And what you need to be successful is that you need to wash out that thinking today. I've been pretty successful doing this, washing out the old thinking, but watching people who were younger than me, of course, who grew up with digital, made me realize how deeply old thinking still permeates my thinking about how I market what I do, not how, I do what I do. In other words, I'm doing new stuff technically, and I've fully embraced that. But in terms of marketing, I still have a lot to learn. So Mitch and I were hanging out on the deck after the seminar, drinking coffee and playing ringtones on our phones for each other and doing the weird, eccentric stuff that we always do. And we started into this discussion about old thinking. And then it got into, because it always does with us, politics, because both of us work in politics a little bit. And you see it in politics, too, and not from a voting perspective, but from a tactical political perspective. Most campaigns for statehouse or Congress or city council, whatever, come pretty much prepackaged. Here's your box with the lit drop material and the lawn signs from the printer. Here's your calendar with the parades you're supposed to walk in and the nursing home visits and so forth. And off you go. And when people are thinking about a political movement, they also think along these old lines. We need signs. We need some people to get together on a meeting on Tuesday or Wednesday nights, and we need to get them riled up, and then they need to go out and find more people to come to this meeting, and then we get them riled up, and then that's our movement. So there's a lot of rhetoric. At best, the new thinking part of this might involve some Facebook and Twitter posts, maybe a few fake Facebook pages and Twitter accounts, and some people writing letters to the editor in the local newspaper. Very seldom do people in these political movements these days, whether it is at the basic party level or inside so-called movements, spend time figuring out the philosophy first, putting academic or intellectual bones on the philosophy so that it is vetted and intellectually clear, and then creating a catechism so that this new philosophy can be taught. And then once people start to come in, putting them to good use, employing new technologies and new thinking to actually accomplish something. Get someone elected or build a movement when the other side never saw it coming. And that is possible today, given the tools that we have. I certainly see this a lot on the right side of the political spectrum, but I know it exists in other part of the political spectrum too, although probably not as much. And you'd be surprised at how high up this ossified old thinking goes in these political party structures. How has old thinking affected your view of politics? You've heard, especially if you're involved in politics at the tactical level, you've heard me talk about the political spectrum. People in media and politics talk about the right-left political continuum as it is set in stone when the right and the left have switched positions over the years more than once. I still hear people talking about sound bites. Well, it's all about sound bites. But really, you know, sound bites and cable television are yesterday. That's what I mean by old thinking. People talk about the two-party political system as it is currently constituted, as set in stone. But there is no law that says one party or another has to be the only party, or a law that says both parties have to remain constituted as they are permanently. In fact, we're actually on our fourth or fifth party system, according to which academics you consult with, and more than one expert believes we're in the process of a shift into yet another party system. Actually, that's a conclusion that I agree with. That is, not the end of the two-party system, but a two-party system that actually reflects different values, new thinking. Remember at the beginning of the show when I talked about how our politics are getting out ahead of the political parties in this country? That is, concerns, frustrations, and specific ideas are beyond sight lines of the two big political parties to be able to harvest votes along these lines. So you have both the Democrat and, to a slightly lesser extent, Republican candidates sounding stale to us, or they are almost completely rhetorical, avoiding specifics and details and facts to support their overarching themes because the overarching themes are rhetorical. People wonder how this is ever going to get fixed. And as I said, if the political institutions in this country are behind the voters in terms of thinking, then that means the policy enacted by the leaders these political parties represent are also behind the people. And then that's a good way to talk about why people feel frustrated that we're not making headway on key issues. And this is a palpable feeling among people on the left and right in this country today. And I think that's really interesting and unique. Maybe fixing it starts with expunging old thinking from our thought patterns, where maybe we don't think right and left anymore or right wrong anymore, but we start thinking about how some specific problem can get solved what are all the ways that something can get solved, even the ways you might not agree with, to consider and think and take out and turn upside down and look at in terms of mechanisms. And this is especially true if you were an adult in the last 30 years or so. The constructs of reality in the world have remained the same for you for the most part. But they have changed in the actual world, that we're all living in. What if the world doesn't work that way anymore? How would you know? Coming up on the eve of the big debates between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, watch how the storylines change. Next, this is the Bob Davis Podcast's radio show.
The way things go, you get so low, struggle to find your skin.
That's a happy little tune. Welcome back to Mobile Podcast Command, live at AgoraFest, just ahead of segment four of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show. Thanks again to the digital sponsor of the BobDavisPodcast.com, Alpha Systems. And I've talked about Alpha Systems for months. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. And what it does is it provides a visual indication of the lift that keeps your airplane in the air. This is critical in general aviation when you make that final turn on approach to land, and it does save lives. Alpha Systems AOA. What you do is click on the Alpha Systems banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator. There's a video there that shows an approach and what it does. Their visual indicator is the best in the business, Alpha Systems, and check them out by clicking on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast at thebobdavispodcast.com. And thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Thanks again to Ryan Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Once again, get that heating checked before the weather sets in so you know everything works right. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Online at ryanplumbing.com. For four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, ryanplumbing.com. And, of course, xgovernmentcars.com. The place where I got Mobile Podcast Command. I've had three Crown Vicks. I think I said four the other night. I guess maybe I'm kind of imaging myself into a new car from xgovernmentcars.com. Crown Vicks, Ford Police Sedans, Ford Police SUVs, Expeditions, Yukons. If you have a job, you can get approved. All levels of credit, plus they take trades. Again, xgovernmentcars.com, 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley. Check out the inventory and see what they've got. Professionally maintained fleet cars from the government, one owner. They're great. xgovernmentcars.com.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Okay, here's segment four of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show, number 45. You're hearing the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. Remember, for all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. Next week, the two mainline party candidates will debate. Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton. NBC's Lester Holt will moderate the debate on September 26th at Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. There will be two more presidential debates, one on October 9th and one on October 19th before the election, with, I believe, one vice presidential debate scheduled on October 4th, 2016. Of course, the schedule is subject to change, and there remain questions about additional debate participants like the Green Party's Jill Stein or the Libertarian Party's Gary Johnson. For the time being, to my knowledge, the Greens and the Libertarians will not be included on September 26th. Now, the main reason for bringing up the debate is not to talk about where the Libertarians or the Greens will be included, or whether they will, or when the debates are, or who's moderating, or where the debates are being held. I really don't care. Almost all media these days operate on something I call storylines, and this is what I want to talk about. Other people have other names for it, but the idea is something happens which drives the general trend of coverage in a particular direction until something else happens and drives it in another direction. And they love these storylines. They don't even care when they change because that's what drives new viewership. The nomination of Donald Trump as the Republican candidate, of course, drove the discourse in a particular direction until something else happened to change the discourse, which turned out to be the big shifting of the Trump campaign to the center. Most recently, Hillary Clinton's collapse on a New York street when she was overcome at the 9/11 memorial drove the discourse in a particular direction. Suddenly, it wasn't all about Trump 24 hours a day, although the Clinton campaign still says that it is. Suddenly, it was about Hillary Clinton. Was she sick? Was something wrong with her? What was wrong with her? What's going to happen? Where was she taken? How sick is she? What's with the coughing and the sunglasses and so forth? Is this going to hurt her in the polls? My issue with this kind of discourse is this isn't about reporting on the issues. Any decent investigative unit at any major newspaper or network could have found out to a high degree of confidence just what was wrong or is wrong with Mrs. Clinton at any point. But they would rather engage in writing about further speculation from this source or that source without any further investigation or vetting. So we, the voters, really don't get any real information from talk radio, the cable news channels, the newspapers, or online websites. Most of the time, articles are written, repurposed with the repackaging, new pictures, things change slightly and re-reported, but it is the same information over and over and over again until the storyline changes. So all of the stories support a particular storyline. And I don't know that it's conscious. It may be something that's subconscious and driven just by the way things go. But that's probably a Pollyanna point of view. What fills the airwaves, then, is speculation about the story and what effect it might or may not have had, even though most of the stories aren't really supported with any new facts. And I use the term facts lightly because mostly the only fact is the opinion expressed by so-and-so came from this or that source. So the fact is the Joe Schmo, the campaign manager for this campaign or that campaign, says blank, and that's the only fact. So as we get ready for the debates on the 26th, if you've been engaged and not escaping with Stranger Things or the new episodes of Longmire or the latest Game of Thrones season, you've noticed that the shift is now to reporting that the latest national polls show Hillary Clinton regaining her lead over Donald Trump. And so the storyline is she has recovered, or her illness has not affected the polls, or Donald Trump is in trouble again. Now, as I've said again and again, that the U.S. election of a president is not a popular vote affair. It is possible to lose the popular vote and win the presidential electoral vote, the only real vote that matters. So since the United States is a 50-state and one territory affair, that is 50 U.S. states have electors, and Washington, D.C. also has three electors, so all 538 electors come from the 50 states and one territory to select the president. It is then a 50-state and one territory affair. Each candidate has states where they have overwhelming popularity. That is, polls show that they have a big lead. These states are considered safe to call as Democrat or Republican states. We all know this. California, Massachusetts, New York, New York, Minnesota are for Hillary. Tennessee and Texas, are for Trump, generally speaking. So when you hear Clinton or Trump is in the lead nationally, depending on the poll, and the storyline shift to can he win from her illness hasn't affected her overall numbers or whatever, remember the state-by-state nature of the race. Now, why do I talk about this? Because so far this week, the state-by-state races have been tightening. Trump remains slightly ahead in Ohio and Florida. Clinton is slightly ahead in Wisconsin and so forth. But you don't hear too much about that. You just hear about the national numbers because last week Trump was in the lead because she fell down, right? The national numbers, again, aren't very predictive. And I go back to 2012 when people thought Romney was going to win because of the national poll averages. If you'd looked at the state-by-state polls, you would see that wasn't that clear. I refuse to go through the state-by-state polls, by the way, in a detailed fashion every week on the show, because first of all, there's tons of people doing this already, so I'm not going to do that. Second, those polls don't change that much, and that's why I think the people doing this every week are ridiculous, because if you go do a day-by-day statewide analysis of the polls, and I do, by the way, it creates the impression that these races are fluid, when it just means that this week there are new polls, let's say in Georgia or Michigan or Arizona. They're not, there's no organized fashion to these polls. Since the statewide polls have different methodologies and voter screens, it is very hard to say this candidate or that candidate has momentum in this state or that state. I have committed to going through the statewide polls once at the end of August, and that podcast remains posted, and again at the end of September, which I will do, and again at the end of October and right before the election on November 8th. But looking at them month to month maybe allows us to see some trends as the races tighten. Day to day is, again, it's more speculation. Political websites and so-called statisticians are now resorting to acrobatics and histrionics in order to stay relevant to you, and a disservice to the rest of the country in the process by doing what is called no toss-up maps. You may have seen these. These are so-called red-blue maps where states that are too close to call or are called for whatever candidate has the advantage, as though the election were held today. Under this scenario, this candidate has so many electoral votes and the other one has this many. No chance that he or she could win. We'll see if this changes tomorrow, right? And that's how that passes for political coverage. My point is this. These are just storylines. This is going to be an extraordinarily difficult election to call for almost any statistician or political scientist for a lot of reasons. First and foremost is this question of the Trump undervote, people who won't tell pollsters they're going to vote for Trump, and then they go out and vote for him. At least that's what you're being told is going on. Now, as you know, I covered the primaries, up close and personal, and I don't remember too many instances where Donald Trump wasn't either way out ahead in a primary race like South Carolina and won, or it wasn't neck and neck and he won. He also lost a couple of primaries where he was neck and neck. So the Trump undervote could be a myth or it could be real, and we won't know until the election. I don't think, though, that it's going to materialize in places where he isn't either in striking distance of Mrs. Clinton or leading her by a couple of percentage points, and it might work either way. Could it happen? Absolutely. But this is going to be a close election, and if you're working for either candidate, you better stay engaged in the trenches because your candidate is going to need your best efforts wherever you are and whatever you're doing. You already know that, though, if you're working for one of the presidential campaigns. As far as the media is concerned, if you want to know what's really going on, avoid reacting to the day-to-day developments, which are used by the media to create new storylines. The media uses storylines as potential rat lines to build new storylines about the supposed vulnerabilities of the candidates depending on the news of the day. Most of it's either misinformation, as I said, or stunts created by the campaigns for political reasons. The debates will have more impact on the potential outcomes in state-by-state polls than almost anything that has happened to date. We're going to see what the impact is when we look at state-by-state polls at the end of September, at the end of October, and right before the election. But the real outcome is on November 8th, when voters in all 50 states and Washington, D.C. cast their vote for president, selecting an electoral slate in their states, which will vote for president sometime in December. And then we will actually see who will be the president. And after that happens, then we'll actually have something to talk about. That's going to do it for this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Again, visit thebobdavispodcast.com for all the Bob Davis podcasts. Bye-bye. This is the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Written man, till your time. Ticking clock. Everyone stop. Cause everyone's saying different things to me. Different things to me. So yeah, I'm parked here at AgoraFest this festival location, which is kind of a resort place near a pole barn, so I can get electricity. And you might be able to hear some people, you know, shouting and screaming here, but we're done with this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. And again, I did four new segments of content, which I'm starting to do a little bit more, because if I don't do a lot of podcasts during the week, I don't want to just rehash a podcast that you've already listened to. So these radio shows are becoming more and more really four mini podcasts, which is kind of neat. And I thank people for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts from the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com and also at iTunes, Stitcher.com, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio. And thanks for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and other social media. Of course, I'm on Instagram. And of course, thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. What do they go for? They go for diesel fuel, Komodo Dragon coffee, and of course, beef jerky, which I eat on the road. I'm getting ready to take a big trip out west, and I'll tell you more about it going forward. But yeah, you guys power Mobile Podcast Command until I get a sponsor for the truck, and I'm working on that. But I really appreciate the donations. When I get out on the road, it makes a huge difference. So that's coming up after probably October 6th, and I'll tell you more about it coming up. But anyway, time to get back to AgoraFest, where I'm having a really fun time. And the next podcast will give you a little bit of a background of what AgoraFest is and how we do things here and how much fun it is. But thanks for listening to Podcast 552. This week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show number 45.